Hello and welcome to this episode of Women's Soccer Zone, our first episode that we have done during the Women's European Championships currently taking place in the Netherlands. The group stages have now been completed and we are awaiting the quarterfinals. And joining me for this show, we actually have four members on this show who've been working tirelessly on our Euro 2017 coverage over the last couple of weeks, all in different time zones as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this works. We have my deputy editor for Women's Soccer Zone, JJ Duke, in America. We have Anne O'Dong, who has been helping us with our coverage on social and writing up our daily wrap-ups. She is based, obviously, down in Australia and is better known for her work with the women's game. And we have Linda Eriksson in Sweden, who, of course, has been working with Women's Soccer Zone for quite some time now. So, guys, thank you very much for helping me complete this episode. I'm going to jump straight in rather than doing introductions or continuing with introductions, but we'll jump straight in, I think, to Group A. Now, Group A was seen as probably the group of death, the most difficult when you looked at the teams that were going to be participating. And Anne, I know that you saw this group as a particularly difficult one. You've helped me out quite a lot with doing some of the social media, so I'd be interested to get your take certainly on what the hot takes are from that group.
Of course, the key hot take is just how badly Norway did in Group A. You know, they came in as the 2013 finalist, had been in reasonable form as they came into the tournament. They lost very narrowly to the United States and probably would have been really disappointed not to have won that one. And so they were, if not the favourites for the group, they were very, very much up there. Then you also had Denmark, who I thought had a pretty solid campaign in that group, and they managed to make it through. But for me, to be honest, the surprise was the Netherlands. I saw them when they played the Algarve Cup in March this year, and they looked okay, but they looked defensively like they had a couple of issues here and there. And they also looked like the attack was really struggling to gel. But they've probably been the most electric attack alongside England in this competition, and they've got so much pace out wide with Shanice van der Sanden and Lieke Martens. And I know we're going to talk about one of the players of the tournament a little bit later, but she's been incredibly good for them. And even the likes of Mandy Vandenberg in the defence and Sari and as the goalkeeper, just across the park, they've been really, really solid. And then, of course, we've got Belgium, who I thought had a very good debut. Again, another team that probably in any other group they might have gone through, as you saw Austria in Group C. But all in all, I thought this was probably the strongest group and the strongest group in terms of overall performances by most of the players in this group.
JJ, you wrote about the Netherlands team for our Euros preview guide. From what you researched and what you're seeing on the pitch, are they fulfilling the potential that they had? And obviously they have the added pressures of being the host nation. What have you made of them in particular?
They've had the pressure of being the host nation. They haven't played a competitive match for quite a while. I mean, you always forget about it in the sense that any host team obviously doesn't have to go through the rigors of qualification. The last time that they played a match, not to say that the Algarve Cup or Cyprus Cup or any of the March tournaments have meaning, they do, but they haven't played a competitive match since they fell in that mini Olympic qualifying tournament last spring. So, you know, they've been kind of sitting around tinkering with a few things. But I think Anne pretty much summed it up nicely that they've been well on the flanks. I'm really surprised at how good that their center back pairing has been. There's been obviously a little bit of, you know, changing of the guard here. But I've loved watching Anouk Dekker sit in just ahead or just behind, you know, that midfield four as well. You have to like Vandenberg. She's just been solid. And sorry, she had one little mistake. I mean, let's face it, that goal from Tessa Vollaert in the third group match, you probably wouldn't have seen that coming, and I've given up a fair share of those goals in my goalkeeping career. So we'll let her off the hook on that one. I think defensively they've done well. They've lived up to the expectation. But, you know, as they say, this is the business end of the tournament right now. You're going to be remembered for how you perform at this stage.
Linda, I'm sorry to pigeonhole you being our Scandinavian-based individual, but I'd be interested to get your take on the Danes. Obviously, they came under a bit of criticism back in 2013 because they limped through to the latter stages without winning a game in normal time. What have you made of them? They've been better this time around, haven't they?
They have been better, but I haven't been enormously impressed. I am surprised that they are through to the quarterfinals, but that is because Norway have underperformed massively. I think I would have put them as the team to place first in this group ahead of the tournament. But Denmark, I mean, they haven't really, they scored 2 goals in 3 games, which isn't a lot, but they only let one in, so they're good defensively.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the key things for Denmark in this competition has actually been their midfield. I thought they would struggle against some of the other midfields. We spoke about Netherlands. They have the likes of Jack Ugronen, who I think has been another player that you could say has been one of the players of the tournament, Daniela van der Donk and Sherita Spitzer. But I think the Danish midfield has also done quite well, and Sanne and Trosgaard has been quite good in there. Lena Hansen has been reasonable in there as well. And then you've got the likes of Pernille Harder and Nadia Nadim, who I think have been really dynamic up front. So Denmark, for me, have been a little bit more attacking than I expected them to be. I know they've only scored the 2 goals, as Linda said, but they've actually put quite a few teams under pressure. And in that second half against the Netherlands, the Dutch were actually quite lucky to hang on there, because Denmark just kept coming at them with waves and waves of attack. And Katrine Vage is another one who's been really, really good for them. So the Danes, I think they will give Germany a couple of questions to answer.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would say that, yes, Denmark haven't been overwhelming, but I think they've improved on 2013. And I think they will give Germany a good game. And we'll talk about Germany shortly. Linda, I'll come back to you. JJ, I'll come back to you in a second. Linda, you will know Martin Sjögren very well, because obviously you follow the Swedish. Damelsvenskan very closely, won the title with Linköping before he took the job on at Norway. Only been in the role for 7 months. Now, I've got an interview with a Norwegian-based journalist, Odd Inger Aas. But I wanted to get your view first on what you've made of Norway and what you've made of Martin Sjögren so far, because along with Austria, Norway are the biggest talking point of this competition for all the wrong reasons. So I'd be interested to get your take on what you've made of them.
Absolutely. I was very surprised that they didn't manage to win a single game this tournament. I think with Martin Sjögren as the coach, you just expected them to do even better, and yet it has only been 7 months, but he was so successful with Linköping that I was expecting a lot more, and I was surprised. I was surprised by some of the decisions he made, not starting certain players like Andrina Hegerberg, changing sort of the style of play in the first couple of games. It was very surprising it was he was trying to do.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think I'll play the interview now with Odd Inger, who, as I said, based out in Norway. I met him out in Utrecht for the opening game when I was out there, and he had some interesting things to say. And the first question that I asked him was, what has been the reaction in Norway to their early exit?
Yeah, it was a big shock. The national team gets a lot of attention during the championships, so the disappointment was huge. And with Ada Hegerberg and Caroline Graham Hansen in the team, I think the expectations were high, maybe a bit too high, but I think no one even considered it a possibility that the team should go 3 matches without scoring and losing all of them. And it also gets into a bigger discussion about Norwegian football, because the men's team is at an all-time low at the FIFA ranking, as I think number 88, and the clubs are struggling to qualify to Europe. And even though the women's team was in the final 4 years ago, I think the feeling is that the development in the women's game in Europe is going a bit too fast for us at the moment. So we're struggling to catch up there as well. So it's a big disappointment.
Why do people think it has gone badly wrong? You mentioned the development there, maybe losing pace with some of the countries around you. But in terms of this tournament, what do people think has gone wrong?
Yeah, if you look at the Euros isolated, I think it's a feeling that Martin Sjögren, the new coach, has tried to change too many things a bit too quickly with his more possession-based style of play, and the tournament proved that the team wasn't ready for the challenge. So I think that's a coach's responsibility, and I mean, the Norwegian team has always been very difficult to break down and to score against, but this time they conceded some very sloppy goals, and there were way too much space between the lines in the team, and the passing game was at times awful, so yeah, a lot of to be disappointed with is. Also criticized for using some players out of position with attacking players at fullbacks in a system which made them very vulnerable when the opponent counterattacked, and I think there were way too little width in the team when attacking, and he also did some changes very close to the championship in the lineup between the last friendly and the first game, which may have led to some of the insecurity we saw in the team. So I think there's been a lot to discuss after the three matches.
You mentioned the changes that he's made there. He's obviously only been in the position for a short amount of time. How much pressure is there now on Martin Sjogren? There are people on social media, some saying that he should be given more time, some saying that he should lose his job. How much pressure is on him?
Yeah, I think I don't think there's a big crowd calling him for to be sacked, but I think he's of course under a lot of pressure now, because the qualification to the World Cup starts in September, and they play Holland away in October, which is obviously a very difficult game, and they're in a tough group where only one team will qualify directly to the World Cups, and I think only one of the 8 number twos in the groups will make it through the playoffs. And I mean, if they fail to qualify, it will be the first time in the history of the Women's World Cup that Norway is at the outside, and that would of course be a very big disappointment and very critical for Norwegian football, and especially for the women's game here. So a lot of pressure, I would say.
And you mentioned there kind of the difficulty that they might have with the World Cup qualifying group in terms of the early exit from the Euros. How damaging is this for women's football in Norway?
Yeah, I think the championships is a very good opportunity to show the game to the people and to a broader public that normally goes to the games here, and they failed to use it this time for the clubs. It would of course been a very good to have the success from the Euros when they now shall negotiate with the FA for better support and also sell a product to the sponsors, which is very difficult for the clubs in the top league here. And on the other hand, it might be a wake-up call for the football family here in Norway. They have used the women's team and the women's game in their celebration speeches, but now it's time, I think, for action and not for the kind words. And I think that's what many thinks and feels after the Euros now.
So that was Oddinga Oss, who's based out in Norway. JJ, I'll quickly get your views before we move on to Group B. I know that you, like I, were big on Norway. Massively disappointing and not made any easier by a post-match interview that Ada Hegerberg held after the match, after their final match, in which she pretty much refused to comment on whether, you know, Martin Sjogren had not necessarily done a good job, but she was pretty reluctant to answer any questions about the team's performance, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. And, you know, we've seen some of actually the worst in people in those types of interviews. I actually have to give her some credit just by the sense that you don't want to be rash. You don't want to let emotions flow over you and say the wrong thing that might come back to hurt you at that time or hurt the chemistry of the team. Because let's face it, I know obviously it's a big competition. You want to make a case for the title, but let's face it, the real picture right now at this team is that World Cup coming in a couple of years. And, you know, there are going to be changes coming. There's no doubt about it. But you can quickly wipe away a bad performance at a major tournament by putting in a really good performance at the next one. So, yeah, like I said, you know, it's you don't want to say the wrong things, and I commend her for that, but I can understand at the same time where other people want to see, you know, some sort of thoughts from a player after a poor showing. And you and I talked about this off air in previous shows as well, that we were surprised by this. They gave the United States one very good match in the lead up to this tournament, had that 4-3-3 formation working really soundly, I think probably, and I'll say this as an American, they deserve to win that match. And then how their form just goes from one end of the spectrum to the other in maybe 30 days is absolutely shocking.
Yeah, really strange one. It'd be interesting to see how they recover from that one. Do want to give a shout out for Belgium. Obviously not spoken that much about them. It's difficult when you finish third and making your debut in the tournament, but I thought they gave a really good account of themselves. I thought Janice Kaiman and Tessa Vollaert up front, of course, are going to grab the headlines. They're the two most well-known players in that team, but I thought they led the line really well. And, you know, with a little bit more luck, especially against Denmark in that first game when they made that late surge to try and get the equaliser, on another day they might have got that leveller and it could have been them that was going through. But unfortunately for them, they didn't. They have a lot to look forward to, I'm sure. I'm interested, guys, before we move on to Group B, I want to get a player of the group from each of you. So, Linda, I'm going to come to you first. Who is your player of Group A?
For me, it's easy. It's Shanice van der Sanden from the Netherlands.
Okay, interesting one. Anne?
For me, it was pretty easy. It was Lieke Martens of the Netherlands. But just really quickly, I just wanted to give a shout-out to two Belgian players who I thought were excellent for their teams. You mentioned Kaiman and Vollaert, but I also think Davina Vilgens and also Tina de Cagny played really important roles in that Belgian midfield.
Yeah, I liked Tina de Cagny. Spoke about her in our preview before the tournament. JJ, I think I know who yours was because you wrote a piece for us.
Well, I mean, I pretty much put the player of the tournament for all the groups if you go on womenssoccerzone.com. So thank you to Linda for making me feel a whole lot better about my decision going public on that. Shanice van der Sanden. I know Lieke had a solid tournament. I've been on the Lieke train for a long time right now. People who have listened to this show know that. But Shanice, I thought her performance was steady through three matches. She'll be my player of the group.
Well, I was very tempted to go with Jackie Gronin. I thought she was excellent. And I tell you what, for someone who I've seen when she was over here at Chelsea as a teenager, she's come a long way from those days. Granted, she didn't get a huge amount of playing time when she was at Chelsea, but she's really, really impressed me in the three games that she's played so far. But I'm with Anne, Lieke Martens. You see the touch, the skills, the opportunities that she's created. I think she's done what Shanice van der Sanden has done, but she's created more with her final ball. And for me, that's the difference between her and Shanice van der Sanden. So Lieke Martens is my player of Group A. So we'll move on to Group B. Germany and Sweden are the two teams that are progressing. We'll come to Germany in a moment, obviously the holders, but we've got our Swede on the show. So we've got to go to her first. Linda, what have you made of your home nation?
It's the first game in I don't remember how many years that we didn't lose to Germany. That was a big thing in Sweden. That got a lot of press attention. It was not the best game I've seen Sweden play, but just the fact that they managed to stand up to them and keep a clean sheet, that was impressive. The Russia game, that was sort of, you know, a standard game. There wasn't anything very special about it. But then the Italy game, that was a disappointment. Pia Sundhage took a bit of a chance. She said so herself that game was on her. It was her fault. It was maybe, I don't know if you agree, it was maybe the most fun game so far of the tournament.
Yep.
I thought so anyway, even though Sweden lost. It was an interesting game, a lot of back and forth, a lot of attacking play, but it was a shame that Sweden lost.
And you've watched a lot of that group. Sweden, I think, showed a bit of everything. They showed the first couple of games how good they are defensively. Maybe in the last game, although they lost, it was probably their best for me attacking performance. I thought the interchange between Blackstenius, Rolfo and Schelin was the best that we'd seen in the three games. But what did you make of them?
No, I agree with that. And look, I think, look, Italy played quite well in that final game, but for Swedish fans, I'd put a little bit of an asterisk on that game. They just had a couple of changes, in particular with Eriksson coming into the centre-back position. Sorry, Katja, I know you're going to hate me for saying that, but I think it lost a little bit of strength there. the Nyla Fischer and Linda Sampran's partnership has been so good for them in terms of strength. And then, of course, Rubinson out on the right and Samuelson sat that one. So I think they'll go back to their normal Anderson, Fischer, Sembrant and Samuelson back four for the quarterfinal, and I think that keeps them a lot more solid foundation. You're right, in terms of attack, I thought Kasvarslani was pretty good during this group stage. I think she was quite lively up front. Blackstenius has to start for them. She's just so, I think she's become so vital, even more so than Shellen, in terms of how that forward line cranks, and she just makes really good, smart decisions. So I think she needs to be starting up there for Sweden. But overall, I think, you know, it was a pretty good Swedish group performance. They did what they had to do. They got through pretty solidly. And they're a great example of JJ saying that after a disappointing tournament, being really careful how you phrase things and how you say things, because they had a disappointing Women's World Cup and they were trounced by Germany in the round of 16. But they held it together as a team, and a lot of that core from 2015 are still playing now under the same coach, and they could have easily broken apart as a team, and they ended up winning a silver medal.
JJ, we've spoken a lot about Sweden. We should, of course, pay homage to Germany, who topped the group, but I'm not going to pay homage too much to them because, for me, they have not overly impressed. Four goals in the competition, three of them penalties, the other one a goalkeeping mistake from a free kick. Not the Germany we're used to seeing from previous tournaments.
Yeah, not the Germany we're used to seeing, but, you know, there's a bigger picture here at stake. They came through the group stage unbeaten. They got themselves 7 points, and they're starting to grow throughout this tournament. Opening match, I think, for them, they'll want to wipe that one from the memory banks. And you're right, that Italy match in the second of the three games, they had some shaky moments. I mean, those are soft serve goals that they scored and conceded at the same time. And you know that Steffi Jones wouldn't have been pleased about that. But you want to continue to get better throughout the tournament so that you're peaking once you get to the knockout round. And I think it's that Russia game. And I think Linda said it best, you know, when Sweden played Russia, it was expected. I'm going to say the same thing for Germany, but it was much more of an effort you expect out of this team. And I think tweeted this after it was either the first or the second game. Or she said that, you know, Germany, they don't necessarily have to play great football or expected football, but they find ways to win. And I think in a tournament like this, all you have to do is find a way to win. And let's face it, this group knows how exactly to do that. And under, you know, a coach at her first major tournament on the sidelines has done that a few times as a player, has won major titles. So, yeah, it's not great, but you know what? They won the group. They're moving on. I think they'll be happy with that.
And what's the noticeable differences that we're seeing between Steffi Jones's Germany and Sylvia Nide's?
I think Steffi Jones's Germany is really more about the possession than I think Sylvia Nide's was. Sylvia Nide's was, possession was almost a means to an end. It was something you kind of did, but it wasn't the aesthetic of the team. I think they, I know it's very cliche, but they were a lot more efficient on the ball. And if they had to play that long ball, they did play that long ball. I think with Steffi Jones's Germany, they really do prize that possession. I'm not too sure if the possession is as constructive as it was with Nides. And I think one of the problems is that they're playing Jennifer Marajan a lot deeper than I'd like to see her playing. I've been really surprised that they haven't played Lena Gosling a little bit more in that number six role and then pushed Marajan up to actually play a true 10 behind the likes of Mandy Ishlacher, who I think has been really good for them in this tournament, and also to be supporting Anya Mittag. And that's been the problem, is that final ball and that finishing for Germany at the moment. But as Mittag said in WOSOZONE's Euro preview, the thing about Germany is when it comes to the tournaments and the pointy end of tournaments, they do step it up. They do know how to win and they do know how to do tournament management. And we saw that at the Olympics. They were rocky at the Olympics. Australia should have defeated them, and a last minute goal from Saskia Bartusiak saw them through, and they almost finished third in the group. But come the knockout stages, they were solid as a rock.
Yeah, I get the feeling Steffi Jones, a little bit like Martin Sjögren and a few other coaches in this tournament, doesn't quite know her best team yet, and I think that's the problem. Mm-hmm. She, like a lot of the coaches, they haven't had a lot of time in their position. Martin Sjögren, 7 months in the position. Steffi Jones, shy of a year. Olivier Ashwafni, less than a year. There are coaches in their positions at the moment who haven't had an awful lot of time to assess their options, and I get the feeling Steffi Jones is one of them. JJ, I'll come to you. I want to group Italy and Russia together because actually no one expected them to really get any points. I think the only points that people were expecting them to get was probably against each other. They actually impressed. I thought Russia exceeded expectations, and obviously Italy's win over Sweden was one of the biggest surprises of the first round.
Yeah, I put that in my recap of the group, that there wasn't a whole lot going for them. This was a pretty clear-cut and dry group. We were expecting Germany and Sweden in that order to advance through, and Russia and Italy to kind of just hang around and see who can pick points off of each other. And, you know, Russia, I'm going to go a little bit against what you said, Kieran. I thought Russia were good for the first half of their opening match. Then the level dropped a little bit. I think maybe they were a little surprised even at that they were handling Italy well. And then from about minute 60 onwards, I think Italy had the better chances. In that freakish sequence right at the end, they thought that they probably had themselves an equalizer. And then, you know, Sweden, you know, took care of business in that match. Germany, same thing. So there were moments, I'll agree with that. But I think, you know, they were... The standings will actually say Russia finished third in the group because of their result against Italy. But I think the real gem was Italy's performance mm-hmm. in that game against Sweden. I know Linda's already said that was a disappointing one for Sweden, but she also said that was the most fun match that we've had in this tournament so far. Absolutely. And it was a shame that I was on a train to work and had to watch it on replay because, boy, oh, boy, that was a great 90 minutes of football.
Yeah, Italy were fun. Go on, Anne.
Sorry, I was about to say, and I think the shame for Italy is that they were so flat in that first game against Russia in that opening half. I think that actually cost them possible progression in this tournament because after that, I mean, we forget just how good their first half was against Germany, and Germany needed a penalty to get out of that one. And I think there are a lot of what-if questions for Italy in the end.
Yeah, I agree. We need to pick a player of the group.
The first game against Russia. Yeah. And what if they'd actually had Alira Moro not injured just before halftime in that game against Germany when they were starting to get on top? You know, all sorts of what-if questions for Italy. And they were one of the teams that will be rueing that they were so flat for 45 minutes in a game, and it really cost them their tournament.
Yeah, no, totally agree. Italy were fun to watch in those two games after the disappointment of the Russian fixture. Need to pick a player from Group B. Linda, I'll start with you. Who was the player that stood out for you in Group B?
Well, you mentioned Bonanti, and she was so impressive against Sweden. I can't say I really knew who she was before this tournament, so I was really impressed by her. But since I am Swedish, I have to choose Lotta Schelin. I do think that she has improved massively defensively. And someone after the game said that Lotta Schelin is now the best attacking defender in the world right now, which I kind of agree with. She played a big role in Sweden keeping a clean sheet against Germany, and she has also scored 2 goals. So.
Yeah, Abby Wambeck's retirement propelled her to number one, I reckon. I think I would struggle to disagree with you on that one. And player of Group B?
I'm going to be that person and put in 2. I'm really sorry. I'm going to put in Stina Blackenstenhouse. I think she was fantastic during the group stage, particularly when she was subbed into the game against Germany. I think she really did prove that she's not just a bench player anymore, and was really key for a lot of the attacking that Sweden did in all their group matches. And the other one for me was Barbara Bonansea. I thought she was really, really fantastic in the way she was able to glide past players. And not only that, I think one of the keys for a winger is, yes, it's the ability to beat the defender, but it's also the ability to create chances and put in that really good final ball, which she did.
JJ, I'll come to you. I might as well just echo what Anne said. Barbara Bonansea, player of the group for me. Absolutely incredible to watch. Just one of those players who, as soon as she got the ball, you knew she was going to run at her defender. She created chances. She was just a joy to watch and a real surprise for me. And as Linda said, you know, maybe a player that people didn't know that much about, plays her football in Italy with Brescia, and we don't get an awful lot of chance to see the Italian Serie A. So really, really impressed with her, and she was my player of Group B. We'll finish with you, mate. Who was yours?
Yeah, you know, strike whatever I wrote for my group review, and it's going to be Bonansea with a small assist to Lana Morrow. I think she was very good, and if she didn't get injured right before halftime of the Germany match, who knows how many more she would have bagged. But you talk about Italian football. We don't see it a whole lot, but, you know, we know that that Juventus team now is going to be started up. Do you wonder maybe on the performance of this tournament? Could that be a prized signing for them before their first season? We'll have to keep an eye out.
Yeah, Fiorentina promoted from Serie B into Serie A as well. They're looking to invest in their team. So some big clubs starting to take an interest in Italian football. Let's move on to Group C. And Linda, I'm going to come to you first again, because it's well publicised that, as well as being a fan of the Swedish team, because of course you are from Sweden, your second love is the French national team, because you have a big interest in Olympique Lyonnais. France finished second in their group when pretty much everyone had them finishing first. We're going to talk about why they finished second in a minute, but I'd be interested to get your take as to what you've made of them.
I am surprised they didn't finish first. I would never, ever, ever have guessed that Austria would finish first. I think France have been underwhelming this tournament. You talked about the coaches. They have a new coach. Maybe that has something to do with it. They're not really, you know, even though they're a group of players who know extremely well how to play together, they did field some slightly different players this time. Young players, Gayoro and Perisse, who I think is a really good player, but unfortunately, I didn't get to watch that last game, not the first half anyway, so I didn't see when she was sent off. But that was very surprising to me. She doesn't strike me as the type of player that normally gets sent off. Maybe one of you has some thoughts about that?
Yeah, JJ, did you cover that game for us?
Yeah, clear cut. You know, it was set up a little bit because of the sequence prior. Bachmann, as she does, she's going to run at defenders and make things happen. And she went after Wendy Renard first. Renard gives her a similar treatment, straight yellow card. Second time, goes at Perisse, and she gets beat, throws out the hip, last defender back, straight red card for me, 100%.
And what did you make of them as a whole? And I'll come to you in a second. JJ, what do you think of them as a whole, overall?
As of France?
Yeah.
Disappointing, I think, again. We're starting to see more and more now their true colors in big tournaments. They play so well in games, maybe not so much that have as big of impact. But when it comes to these matches, I didn't think they were that great against Iceland, to be fair. We saw Austria not back down from them. Sure, they had to defend for quite a while, but you know, they didn't feel pressure. They created chances, and they may have had an opportunity to go take that one. And then in the match against Switzerland, I mean, you have to give them credit because they were down a player for 70 minutes, and they still held like a whopping 65-plus percentage of the ball and kept Switzerland on their back line. But if it wasn't for a little bit of genius from Camille Abeli, then they could not be, or that their tournament would be over.
And as JJ mentioned there, 60-odd% possession against Switzerland with 10 players for the large majority of the game. Put some positives on the French team. Amandine Henry has been one of the players of the first round for me. I think she's stepped up big time. Her game has come on a long way since the move to Portland. We knew how good she was defensively. She's now playing a more important role in support, even supporting the front players, linking that defence and the attack. We've seen some younger players come in, as Linda mentioned, Grace Guyoro, Yves Perisset, very unfortunate to get sent off. But give the French fans something to be positive about. Come on.
Okay. I support three teams, the Matildas, Japan and France. And France are definitely my problem child. Positives. Positives, I definitely think, as you said, Amandine Henry, I think she's been really good in terms of she's actually played a lot more forward this tournament. She's not played, I think, a traditional number six role. I think she's probably played more of a number eight role alongside Abelie when she's needed to. And I think she's been probably their best player during this tournament so far. Definitely their most consistent player. France, I think, out wide, they've been reasonably good. Perse has been good. She was good when she was going forward. Lasoma was good in patches. And I think that's part of the problem is they've had players that have been good in patches throughout this tournament. Renard was good in the first game against Iceland. Then you had Henri, who pulled them back from the brink against Austria in that game. And then finally, in the final game, you had Abelie and Claire Lavergier, who were the key instigators to their fight back against Switzerland. So for them, at the moment, they haven't had a large group of players come together at the same time, which is what, if you're having a look at the likes of the Netherlands and Denmark, Germany even, Sweden, they've actually had a really decent core group of players playing well. And I just don't think France have had that yet.
Right. People will be asking, why are you spending so much time talking about France when they finished second? So let's talk about the top team that were Austria, because Austria, along with Norway, are without question the talking point of this first round. JJ, I'll come to you first. Everyone expected them to go out the first round. Everyone expected them to finish bottom of the group. Anyone that says otherwise is lying. Even the most diehard Austrian fan kind of expected them to finish top of the group. How bloody good were they?
They're amazing. I mean, let's just be real right now. I kind of joked to you saying whoever had the superfacta of Austria, France, Switzerland, and Iceland before this tournament, I want to go and shake their hand and find out where their lucky pot of gold is, because I could surely use some. But let's face it, I mean, they did not stand down to any challenge. I mean, this is, on paper, this is a tough group. Going in, France, one of the best teams in the world, hands down. Ramona Backman and Switzerland, I think she might be one of the most dangerous players in the world. And Iceland, as we all know, I mean, we will say that this was not so much a big tournament for them, but they're still quite a good team and experience in this tournament. How does a team in Austria who is qualified for a grand total of two European youth competitions, all coming within the last, I think, 5 years or so, win matches, and especially in that match against Iceland, thoroughly dominate for 90 minutes. They have been absolutely brilliant, and I think if anybody needs any other reason to, or any more reason, I should say, to back this team, just go watch the video of them conga lining up and down the media zone after that Iceland, because they were brilliant.
Yeah, Linda, did you see much of them? I mean, their form coming into the tournament was horrible. I think they had a 4-2 win over Denmark, but other than that, they had a poor Cyprus Cup. They were hammered by England in the lead-up to the tournament, hammered by the Netherlands. I mean, they really have shocked people, haven't they?
They really have. I would have predicted they would finish last in this group as well. I mean, to not lose a single game in the group at the group stage, it's amazing. And they have really surprised me. I have seen some of their players play because they came, one of their club teams came to Sweden to play against Tyresö back a couple of years ago, and they were just completely dominated by Tyresö, the Swedish team. I thought Nina Berger, I think she played in that game, I thought she was good. She was a threat to them, but that was the only player I can say that I really knew from the Austrian side before this tournament.
And round it off, big up the Austrian team for us.
Oh, I am. I'm definitely going to big up the Austrian team. I saw quite a bit of them during this tournament. And you know what? If there's one theme that I think runs through this tournament at the moment is that possession is almost a useless statistic. If that's how you are going to figure out whether you've had a good game or not, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, because the teams that have done well this tournament have actually not had all that much possession. And if you have a look at this Austrian team, I mean, they only had 37% possession against Switzerland, and really Switzerland had not all that many looks in at their goal. They only had 34% possession against France, and the only team where they had positive possession statistic was against Iceland. And I think what it's been is their ability to organise and their ability to work off the ball and be really, really efficient in possession. Their ability to transition out from defence into attack has been excellent, and you see that with the likes of Sarah Zadrigal in the midfield. Nicole Biller, I think she's been excellent. And, of course, the person who's got a lot of the plaudits so far has been Nina Berger. But we're going to talk about what it means to be the player of the group. And I've got two players of the group that I'll talk about when that happens, because they've been the key to Austria being able to absorb a lot of defensive pressure and then transition quickly into attack. And they've been excellent throughout the tournament, and I really do think they should get every single plaudit that they deserve.
Yeah, hold that thought on those two players. I can't really say any more than what you guys have said. Absolutely superb. Defied all the odds. They're going to go through. They've got a very winnable quarterfinal, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Linda, you will have seen a lot of Ramona Backman when she played in Sweden. You will have seen a lot of Lara Dickenman when she played for Lyon. What did you make of Switzerland? Because I think that it was probably them or Iceland that many predicted to finish runner-up. I was personally disappointed. Yeah. What was your view?
I did expect Switzerland to finish as the runner-up behind France. I think Switzerland were... I don't know. Against France, they really impressed me at times. Dickenman and Bachmann, just like they had a lot of pace against France and they threatened them a bit. And obviously, it was, I mean, I thought France were going to lose that game, to be honest, until Abeli scored that free kick. But the first couple of games were difficult to tell. And with that kind of performance, it's not surprising that they did finish third. They were a bit unlucky, but it wasn't too harsh, I think, for them to finish third.
Yeah, uphill struggle for them after losing that opening game to Austria. JJ, let's try and round this group up, mate, because I'm conscious of time. Iceland, the only other team along with Norway to come away pointless, came into the competition with some crippling injuries. Not an easy one for them. Their fans get A+, as far as I'm concerned, for what they did in terms of supporting their team, but a little bit, this tournament came a bit too soon for them, didn't it, in terms of trying to get some of those players back?
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you know, for their first two matches, they put in real game efforts. I mean, they were not step for step with France, but they were pretty close. I think they probably deserved some sort of a result after that. And, you know, they, again, good show against Switzerland in the second one, but bad timings, conceding right before and right after halftime. That's always going to be the big crutch for any team and for any coach as well, trying to adapt. And, you know, at that point when they were facing Austria, they're just getting peppered with so many chances that they couldn't really generate much for. Defensively, they were a little bit lackadaisical at times, and I think that cost them dearly. But I think the difference between them and the difference between – or them and Norway – is I saw a lot of fight from this Iceland team. They never fell on their sword. They kept going after it until, I think, right at the end of that Austria match when it was all said and done at that point. But still a lot to build from. I think we're going to see more big things coming out of this team. And I know you and Anna both talked with Freyr Alexanderson. A lot of passion for this program, lots of good things happening. And, yeah, not going to be the end and not going to be a note that we're going to remember Iceland for.
Yeah, and round it off with Iceland, because you wrote the preview. You spoke to Freyr Alexandersson, the head coach. What did you make of them?
Yeah, it's just a tough tournament for them. Unfortunately, those four ACL injuries just before the tournament really did hurt them. And Freya Alexanderson said, you know, they were going to go out there, they were still going to give it their absolute best. But he was aware that, you know, for a country like Iceland, and we all know about the small population, they just couldn't afford to lose four starters for them, essentially, just before the tournament. And then you also had one of their strikers have a baby just 4 months before the tournament began. So, unfortunately for them, I think there were a couple of really good players during this tournament. Fandis Friendic's daughter, I thought she was excellent. And so was Dagny Brynja's daughter, who really had been on the brink of maybe not even coming to the tournament after so many injuries in the lead up. And of course, Sarah Bjørgunna's daughter was excellent again. So they were really out of it by the time it came to the Austrian game. He said they were just so flat, and it was really tough to get them up for the game. And I think they've got a really bright future. I thought there were some good young players that got chances in this tournament, and that they are going to be a better team for it. I mean, their qualification was so good that I think if they can do something quite similar, they might be going to their first Women's World Cup.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, isn't it? Like we've said, a nation that small with a small pool of players to pick from, you need to be at full strength. And we're going to probably have a similar conversation when we come to Scotland in Group D. But before we do that, we need to pick our player of the group. So, Linda, I'll start with you. Player of Group C for yourself.
Oh, this one's difficult. I think Amandine Henry was really consistent, but I think this time I'm going to go with someone who was a surprise to me, and that is Sarah Sadrasil for Austria. That's, again, another player I didn't know about before this tournament. I'm surprised I didn't know about her, but I thought she was really impressive for Austria.
Yeah, JJ, I know you bigged her up in your wrap-up and kind of look back at Group C. Are you going to echo what Linda said?
Echo 100%. Linda, the reason why you never heard of her, because we kept her here in the States for 4 years. the pride of East Tennessee State University. Go on to the Bucks. No, she's a real good player. I mean, I knew that she was tearing it up in the NCAA level and had a really good experience as well playing in the last season of the USLW League with Washington Spirit Reserves. So we knew a little bit more about her here, and I'm not surprised. I mean, also by the fact that her tournament nearly ended right at the end of that Switzerland match, where she suffered a pretty horrific tackle and was able to find her way back onto the field for the final match. Yeah, for me, I know Anne's got some defensive gems, but I'm going to stick with the offensive side and go with Sarah Zadrazil.
Yeah, I'm going to go with two surprise players of this group, and they are Karina Vinninger and Virginia Kirschberger. I think those two were so central to how they were able to organise themselves defensively, particularly when they were coming up under so much pressure in the France game and also in the Switzerland game. You have to remember that this is a team that, although they scored quite a few goals towards the end of their group, they actually only conceded one goal. That is a massive effort considering how much possession their midfield and attack gave up to the opposition. So those two were the big ones in terms of organising that team and making sure that they were defensively solid throughout the group.
Yeah.
And I think Spain are actually going to have a really tough time breaking them down.
Yes, we're going to talk about Spain in a second, and I agree with you. I really struggle with this one. I'm with Linda. I think it's possibly the hardest one to pick out, because there were so many, especially from the Austria team, who stood out. But Emma Hayes was bigging her up on Eurosport. I have to go with Nina Berger, seeing as you guys haven't, because I think it would be a crying shame if not one of us did, because led the line superbly. I think people will know Nina Berger probably more than most of the players that we've been talking about, because she had the stint with the Houston Dash. She is the player that probably gets the most attention, but with that comes pressure. You know, when you are that focal point, I think you have to try and handle the pressure that comes with that. I think she's been superb. She's been a big reason as to why they've made it through to the quarterfinals, and I think it would be a real shame if one of us didn't go for her. So I'm going to go with Nina Berger, but there were a lot of players that impressed me in that group, some of which, as you say, were in the Iceland team. who finished bottom. You know, this was a difficult group to kind of call. So we will move on. This one is, it gives me great delight to talk about for obvious reasons, Group D. England topped the group. I'm not going to talk about England too much because if I do, I won't stop. Obviously, England topped the group. They will be joined in the quarterfinals by Spain. JJ, I'll come to you first because I've left you last the last couple of times. I mean, you've seen a lot of this group like I have. Give me your main talking points from the group. What stood out for you from Group D?
Well, similar to you, I could go on days and days for England, so I might just push that off to the side for the moment. Anne brought up a point about possession. I think it was in when we were talking about either France or talking about Germany and Sweden, but let's face the facts for Spain. They played beautiful football. I mean, completing, 600 passes in their first match against Portugal, and also in the second match against England, having, 70% of the ball, completing over 90% of their passes, and yet they only score two goals. Kieran, you tweeted after their second match, there's a difference between elite teams and very good teams. I think that's the big one right there. If they can't finish off their chances, they're going to have a real problem in the knockout stages. And let's face it, they're a very solid team. They're a team that continues to be on the rise. A great midfield. Losada's been excellent, pulling the strings. Manda San Pedro has done very well in this tournament as well, scoring in the opener, afforded also a couple of chances in the latter two matches. But I think that's going to be the big one for me, is if they can't finish, then they're going to be going out rather shortly. I'll leave it at that for right now.
And I know you'll have a lot on this group, so I'll come to Linda first. Linda, main talking points for you from Group D?
Well, Spain is... I don't really understand Spain and their selection for this tournament. I can't believe Vero Baquete was left out of the squad. I think with her on the squad, Spain wouldn't be struggling so much to score. So I think that's a shame, and I think that's Spain is going to suffer because of that. But obviously the main talking point is England. They have done so exceptionally well. I mean, I know they're good, but 6-0 in the opening game, that I did not expect that.
Oh, yes. I'm glad other people are bigging them up for me. I don't need to do it that way. But no, I actually think the Vera Baquette situation is very interesting. I think Sonia Bermudez is another one, because Jenny Hermoso, so much expected of Jenny Hermoso after such a great season with Barcelona, was very good with Tirso before, has got a big move to PSG. But I think because of the lack, the absence of Bermudez and Boquete, too much emphasis on her now, too much responsibility. And actually, she's been very, very quiet in the three games that she's played. And go ahead. You've got a lot to say on this group. I'm just going to let you freestyle.
No, with this group, I think the first thing we have to talk about is England defensively. I mean, when you look at the 6-0 result against Scotland, a lot of talk is about just the attack, and in particular Jodie Taylor, who first Euros hat-trick in 20 years. But I think in the second game is really where we see the work that Mark Sampson has done with England since the 2015 Women's World Cup. Defensively, England, what they've done is been able to learn how to absorb pressure and counter-attack really well. I think the centre-back pairing in Millie Bright and Steph Horton has been so crucial to that. And we saw that when Horton was out in the final game, they really looked a little bit at sea in terms of their defence and their organisation. Added to that, in front of them, they've got those two rotating number sixes in Jill Scott and Jade Moore. And that back, I'm trying to count here, back six is so crucial to how England work as a team, because that stability allows the likes of Fran Kirby, Jordan Nobbs, Ellen White and Jodie Taylor to do the work that they do in that front half. But I think the key thing was in this Spanish game, they were able to transition really well. And that is because of the pace of Kirby, Taylor and White. And that was one of the keys for them. Whenever they were in trouble, they were able to get it out there in those three were able to relieve a little bit of the pressure. And that's been where England worked really well against the United States as well. And we saw that in Ellen White getting the goal. And I think she's probably one of the more underrated players. I know Taylor and Kirby and Nobbs get a lot of the plaudits, but actually it's Ellen White who I think has been one of the keys to coming into this side and being able to play one or two little passes with those other attacking players, or play that great release ball out, whether it's a reverse pass out to the run of Taylor or it's just that little through ball through to the run of Kirby. And she's been so crucial to that. Spain, I think Spain needs to watch a lot more of Japan in terms of constructive possession. Yes, they have a lot of possession, but a lot of it is not actually as incisive as you want it to be. And I think part of that problem is actually been their forward line in Amanda Sampadoro and also Jenny Hermoso. They've just not been dynamic enough. If you see the best teams and the best forwards, they do those small, sharp runs continually, which gives the midfield an opportunity to pick out balls. And I just don't think those two work hard enough to do that and give their midfielders like Lozada and Portales options. So that's going to be the key for Spain now, is can they change that up quick enough, because they're going to have real problems breaking down a Austrian defence who will be really solid and really compact in that respect.
I have no more to add on those two teams. I think you were almost going to miss out Jordan Nobbs, and then you mentioned her. I think Jordan has been just as important as those front players that you mentioned. Ellen White is having the year of her life, made a move to Birmingham City Ladies, which has really kind of re-energized her career. She's had some really difficult times with injuries, but she is having a hell of a 2017. And you mentioned the goal that she scored, obviously the not just the passing, she had the flick on for Jodie Taylor's hat-trick goal as well. She has been really, really key and absolutely spot on in terms of the organization of that back six. You know, Jordan and Ellen and Fran are given that freedom to almost interchange and roam, because Jill Scott and Jade Moore are so disciplined sitting in front of that back four. And, you know, Spain had 60-70% possession throughout the whole 90 minutes and they had one shot on target. And that shows you how hard England worked, how they constrained and really tightened Spain into tight areas. And I wasn't overwhelmed with Spain in terms of the chances they created. But, oh, my God, you know, Mark Sampson was talking about, what was it, dark something that he was talking
dark
about
arts.
Dark arts with Isaiah. There was nothing dark about the way that Spain played, but it was just that final ball, it was just that creativity that they lacked. But talked a lot about England and Spain. JJ, we've got to give a mention to Scotland and Portugal, because they both won a game, they were both up for qualification going into that final game. For various reasons, people didn't really give them a chance. Scotland had a lot of players missing. Portugal were the lowest ranked team in the competition, but gave a good account of themselves, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, I did the preview in the Women's Soccer Zone Euros preview guide for Portugal. So, you know, learned a little bit more about that team, like really give me a scouting report, because let's face it, outside of a few players, we didn't really know much about that team. And they looked deer-eyed in that first match against Spain. They looked like they were in over their heads and didn't really have much to go through this group. But, you know, that Scotland match, once Carolina Mendes scored her first goal, I think they really settled down and started to show the reasoning why that they deserve to be in this tournament. And, you know, they're able to get through that match with Ana Leche getting a goal inside the last 20 minutes. I think Francisco Neto did well in making the proper changes, because he brought off a bunch of players that really, not to say that they didn't perform well in that first match, but you know, he didn't want to bring that negative energy into the second match and already that could be defeatist attitude. Brought in some new players who are dying to make something happen and change their outcome. And they gave a good account of themselves. And in that third match, I know, Kieran, you were a little vocal about the 10 changes that England made. And some people could say, well, Portugal pretty much played against the second, you know, the second side of England. But I thought they played very well in that final match. And they had a really good chance right at the death to level that one up. And, you know, because Spain, they were lackluster in front of goal, we could have seen the real surprise of the tournament is Portugal got through to the last eight. So I think we have to give them a lot of credit. I'll let someone else take the reins on Scotland. But, you know, the only up and up for here for Portugal, not only just to be that host team every year in the Algarve Cup, but I think they have something going for them for the future.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, you said there about potentially surprising them. They created more in the opening half an hour than Scotland and Spain did in 90 minutes in their respective matches. So they actually, yes, they were playing against a team that had made a lot of changes. And yes, I was very vocal about it because I think it was too many. But Portugal gave a good account of themselves. And I'll take Scotland quickly before we get the players of the round. Scotland, we've mentioned it already. You know, they came into this tournament massively disadvantaged. No Kim Little. Any team in the world is going to miss a player of Kim Little's quality. But when you add Jenny Beattie, a starting centre-back, and Emma Mitchell, their starting left-back, and then to lose Jane Ross after the first game against England, they had it all to do in those final two games. And they will be hugely disappointed with how they performed against Portugal because they weren't good enough and it was mistakes that led to the defeat. Erin Cuthbert is a teenager who plays in England for Chelsea. She showed glimpses of what she's going to be able to do in the future. I thought she played really well in the minutes that we saw. They obviously got the morale-boosting victory against Spain in the final game. Caroline Weir was a player that a lot of people spoke about in the absence of Kim Little. She stepped up in that final game to get the winner. But it was always going to be too much for them. That's the unfortunate thing. And yes, they gave a good account of themselves in that last game, but they'll be disappointed with how it went against England. You know, to lose to your arch-enemy 6-0 in an opening game is not a great way to start a competition, especially against a team that you're so desperate to win against. And then Portugal, as I say, mistakes cost them. You know, Valia Bardsley coming in, it was, you know, she only made her debut for Scotland in April. Massively disappointing for her because she's had such a good, I mean, Linda would know better than I would, really good season for Eskilstuna in Sweden. You know, to make that error to gift Portugal their first goal, it put Scotland on the back foot straight away and made things very, very difficult for them. But they'll be back. You know, they've got Shelley Kerr coming in as head coach, very, very highly respected in terms of what she's done for Scottish youth football, won the FA Cup with Arsenal ladies as well. Must give a shout out to Anna Signor, obviously her last game in charge. She's going to be moving on to Finland. You know, they gave a good account of themselves in that Spain game, but they were disappointing against Portugal. The England game they could scrub off, but Portugal was the one they needed to win. But look, we'll move on. And player of Group D.
Player of Group D. I'm going to go with Jordan Nobbs. I think she was creatively, as you said, really, really key for England, really pulling the strings when they needed it. And her ability to find and connect with her midfielders, I think, was key. She had also that nice little touch for the Jodie Taylor goal that sealed the game against Spain. And that's just indicative of just what she can do technically on the ball. But also a shout out to Jodie Taylor, of course. You can't score four goals in a tournament. And particularly she's been quite clinical with the number of shots she's had on goal as well, which has always been in the past a criticism of Jodie Taylor, but in this tournament she's been excellent.
I know, mate, you're really high on Millie Bright in her tournament, and I think she's done quite fantastic, but I'm going to give it to her centre-back partner and the captain herself, Steph Houghton. She's been fantastic in the two matches, and you know, Anne talked about defensive organisation. She is the leader, not only of the team, but of that back four. Yeah, England's going to have to key on her experience and her reliability to carry them through the next round and potentially to that final.
Linda, player of Group D.
I've been a massive fan of Ellen White for years and years and years, but since no one else has, I think I have to go with Jodie Taylor for this one. An incredible first game for her with the hat-trick.
Would you go for Ellen White if I'd gone for Jodie Taylor?
Maybe.
I'm going Jodie Taylor. I think one of the things that it's so difficult to try and cram everything into a show that's probably going to be an hour to 90 minutes max. I think number nines have struggled a little bit in this competition. We've spoken a lot in the lead up. The likes of Vivian Miedema hasn't scored a goal. Ada Hegerberg didn't score a goal. Anya Mittag hasn't scored a goal. You know, we've got high-profile number nines coming into this competition who haven't been able to find the net. Jodie Taylor's done it four times. So for me, the standout number nine of the competition so far, and for that reason, I have to give her the player of Group D. But you know, that's not an indictment on some of those players I've mentioned. They've put in really good performances. But actually, when it's come to scoring goals, Jodie Taylor is the player that stepped up and found the net. But I want to move on very quickly to the quarterfinals, and I think I'm conscious of time because we've been chatting for an hour already. I think rather than us all discussing individual quarterfinals collectively, I want to take a quarterfinal each and discuss it. So, Linda, do you want to go first? Do you want to take Denmark against Germany? Actually, no, let's give you Sweden. It makes sense to give you Sweden. Yeah, so talk about the Sweden quarterfinal. Come on.
Sweden, like,
yeah, okay, all right. Brain freeze. Take the Sweden quarterfinal.
I'm obviously hoping Sweden's going to win. That's a no-brainer. But Netherlands have been very impressive. I do think it's difficult to tell, though, how good the Netherlands are because their group was very close. Sweden's group was a bit more interesting in a way. Sweden performed really well against Germany, and if they can repeat that kind of performance, I think they can beat the Netherlands.
And pick one of the other three to speak about.
I'm going to surprisingly speak about the Austria and Spain one. I think this is a really good opportunity for both of those sides to make a major tournament semi-final. And although they're in the same group as the Germany and Denmark group, I think if these two sides can get it together, they have a really good chance. I think it's going to be a game that Austria is very, very comfortable with. It's a game that they've played all tournament where Spain will dominate possession, but the Austrian organisation in defence is going to come right into it, and they absolutely have the players to be able to hit on the counter. It's what England did, it's what Scotland did, and it's what Austria have absolutely the ability, so Zadrigal and also Berger, to be able to do to Spain if they're not really, really careful. So I actually think this is a danger game that Spain, I don't think we'll be able to break down Austria, and I think Austria might look like warm favourites for this game.
JJ, you've got France against England or Germany against Denmark. Take your pick, pal.
Well, I'll leave you to the England-France game. I'm going to make two quick points about Austria-Spain, and I really wish that you're going to let me take that one, but I'm going to take a shout at the director of choosing which matches goes when. Why did you make that one first on Sunday? I'm going to be missing half that match on a train going to work. So I am not the fan of the Euros at the moment. And I think you're 100% right. I think Austria, they're going to make that one a lot more challenging than Spain would imagine. But Germany-Denmark. Okay, so my big talking points here is, again, I think Germany, they got the match that they probably underperformed out of their system. That would have been the second match of their group stage against Italy. And I think that performance against Russia, that was a more of a clinical performance we'd expect Germany out of a term in its experience in this, you know, in these later stages. We can obviously point to their performance in 2013 where they played, you know, don't want to say defensive because that would be almost negative, but they were very organized in how they went about their business and struck when the iron was hot, which was in that penalty shootout against France, and nearly did the same trick again in the semifinals. Denmark is a team that needs to score early. I don't see them being a team that plays from behind, but then again, saying that, I think they performed admirably against the Netherlands in that second half, despite trailing. But I think if they're going to have any success, they need to do what they've done, score within the first 15 minutes, get organized, and hit when it matters. Germany, if they can find a way to get out early, then they're going to be in total control. And they have to like their opportunities in this bottom half of the draw.
You guys give me England-France when we've not beaten France in a competitive match and haven't won in over 40 years, and you ask me to speak about it.
Go on, Karen.
Where do I start? Well, the war of words has started already because Olivier Ochoafny has said in media in France that England will not want to play France. It's a team that they obviously have a poor record against. Mark Sampson has responded by saying that Ochoafny is wet behind the ears when it comes to tournament football. He's obviously only played the three matches and has won one of them. So the war of words between the head coaches has already started. The honest view back here in England is obvious, is that France are there for the taking. They haven't played particularly well. in this competition. They finished runners up to an Austrian side who we've bigged up plenty in this podcast, but they haven't clicked, I think, is the real key here. They've got two starters who are suspended for that quarterfinal. Wendy Renard is, for me, the best centre-back in the world, alongside Becky Sauerbrunn. She will not be playing due to the two bookings she received in the group. Yves Perisset, I think, is replaceable because they'll just bring in Jessica Huara-Duomo. So I don't see that one as being a huge loss. But Renard is irreplaceable, you know, unless you've got Becky Sauerbrunn or possibly Steph Horton, I think, is in that category now, ready to step in. That is a huge loss. We've spoken about Amandine Henry at length. Eugenie Le Sommer, I think, is due a breakout game in this tournament. We haven't seen that yet, but I think it's now or never for England. I really do. I think France are there for the taking. And the way that England have played, they had the luxury of resting 10 players in that last game against Portugal. So I've no doubt that the majority, if not all of those, will come back in for the quarterfinal with France. So you've got a fresh 10 players that are coming in when France have had to slog their guts out with 10 players against Switzerland for 70 minutes. It's really difficult, really, really difficult. I don't want to jinx it, but I really do think this is England's game. And if not, I do wonder when that elusive win is going to come. But I've got to go with England. You know, I think they've been superb and they're coming into this competition in great form. And I think this could be their time. So it's going to be really fun. And obviously, I think it's nice for me that it's the last quarterfinal of the four. So I think it'll be a really interesting one. I'll wrap it up there, guys. We've picked up players of the group individually, but I want your player of the first round to wrap this up. So, Linda, I'll start with you. Your best player of the whole of the first round.
Oh, my God, so difficult. I really don't know.
We'll come back to you. Anne?
Yeah.
I've got to go with Lika Martins. She was my player of Group A. But I also think with the Netherlands, alongside England, the only team with a 3-from-3 group record, they've been pretty good defensively as well. But I think it's in the attack that they haven't scored the most goals, but I think they've been the most dynamic side. And the key player to that has been Lika Martins, but also a shout out to Jackie Gronin.
JJ?
All right. Also, before we wrap up, I do want to give a couple of shouts for the whole of the tournament so far, but for the player, Jodie Taylor. I think it's, you know, you have to give it to her because she's got the four goals and been clinical. I think the ties for runner-up would have to go to Lika and Shannis van de Sanden, and also the DJ for the Austrian women's national team who snuck on that mobile disco ball onto their flight. That they get a shout for that.
Okay, I can't argue with that. Linda, any thoughts from when we came to you first time?
I have to say Jodie Taylor also. Out of the four players I picked for the group, it has to be Jodie Taylor. She's been outstanding.
Okay, I'm agreeing with Anne again. I'm going Lika Martins, but I do like the DJ from the Austrian team and the Iceland fans as well. The Iceland fans and the Netherlands fans, having been out in Utrecht for the first game, the Netherlands fans, absolutely superb. 21,500 people at that opening game, which was a record for a Dutch women's football match. Interestingly, I think Sweden, Germany as well. There were some stats that were released by UEFA today. Sweden, Germany, nearly 10,000. That was a record for a team not involving the host nation at a European Championships as well. So some good attendances, some good and games. And go on.
And also, a lot of the quarterfinals, I think three of the four quarterfinals are already sold out. So fantastic attendances by the Dutch and really have made a great atmosphere during these Euros.
Yeah, it's been superb.
Agreed.
As of you guys, really appreciate you joining me on this show. Thank you, listeners. Obviously, with four of us on, we don't do this very often. Apologies if it was a little bit disjointed. You can blame the anchor man for that. That is me. Thank you very much for joining us. We will come back to you probably next week, maybe after the quarterfinals, if not definitely after the semifinals, previewing the final. Until then, take care of yourselves. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, JJ. Thank you, listeners. We'll catch up with you soon. Take care and bye-bye.